Hello everyone, welcome to the International Business Podcast. If you work across time zones, borders and cultures, this is the show for you. I'm Leonardo, founder and host of the show, but let's make it simple and just call me Leo. I'm based in Shanghai and I'm accompanied by two co-hosts, Stefano, based in Paris, and Audrey from San Francisco. Coming up on today's episode.
So for me, the clean tech sector became my focal point. I'm based in Toronto, and here in Toronto, we happen to have a clean tech innovation hub, which is very exciting. And the more I immerse myself in the sector, the more I'm just kind of blown away by all the really clever and amazing solutions that are already out there and that people are developing and growing and bringing on the market. Basically, there has to be an alignment, right? Your stakeholders and your competitors can be global now. They're connected, they're digitally savvy. So your brand identity needs to be consistent across all the markets that you're trying to serve.
Catherine is the head of Verbacino, an independent marketing consultancy that helps clean tech companies go global. Working at the intersection of global business, international marketing, and localization, Catherine's focus is on developing digital content strategies that drive international expansion and on facilitating their implementation by qualified practitioners. You can find more details about her in the show notes. Now, enjoy this episode led by co-host Audrey.
Hi, Catherine. I'm glad to have you on. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Audrey. Thanks so much. It's a pleasure to be on your show.
So, Catherine, why would you define yourself as an international professional?
Well, I've thought about this. I can't claim to have worked in all kinds of different countries, but I have been multilingual and multicultural from the day I was born. So I was born in the province of Quebec here in Canada. And for those of you who know, Quebec is majority French speaking. However, my parents were not French speaking, they're German speaking, and I was born literally a month after they had immigrated to Canada from Germany. So I grew up speaking German at home, French everywhere outside the home, and then I guess you could say English is sort of my third language that I picked up on the side just by virtue of, you know, growing up in North America. So I grew up perfectly trilingual, and of course, all my relatives are still in Germany. So I also grew up, you know, traveling to mostly Germany, but, you know, partly also Switzerland and Austria and other parts of Europe, but mostly Germany, basically all my life, all through my childhood, we'd go there, you know, most summers. And so I have a very strong connection still to my German family. I've always loved travel. I've always loved languages. You know, that's probably why I ended up studying linguistics in university. And I've always been fascinated with different cultures. So I'm sort of a language and culture nerd. And I just love to be able to apply that love in the work that I do.
So let's begin with a very basic but vital question. What is the meaning of branding?
Well, it's a very good question because branding, you know, means different things to different people. But I have to say, to me, branding is basically the opposite of commoditization. So commoditization is when you're basically competing on price, right? And so branding is getting away from commoditization. It's a strategic, creation of a unique and memorable impression that is meant, of course, to resonate with your target stakeholders. And of course, also to facilitate, you know, future interactions, positive interactions, of course. So in essence, it's the proprietary creation of value. And I think, you know, also good branding is it has to be multidimensional, especially for, you know, companies, the bigger they get. It has to include not only your customer brand, but it also has to include, often your investor brand. And also your employer brand is super important. And that all has to be very cohesive. And of course, branding these days, more and more, I think it's people are understanding that it has to be based in reality. It has to be authentic. So it has to align with your company's actual values actual activities. Because people can verify that. They can see whether you're, walking the talk. So if you end up with a conflict between what you say is your brand identity, so how you want to be perceived in the world, and your brand image, which is how people actually perceive you in the world, if there's a conflict between those two things, then you've got a problem, right? But ultimately, the goal, I think, of branding is to build equity, brand equity, so that you can get away from commoditization.
Building off of that, why is global brand strategy so important in the digital age?
Well, of course, because, you know, we're all connected in this global economy. We're all, you know, on the internet, we're all using social media. And people, whether you like it or not, they're going to develop an image in their own minds of your brand, of your company. That image will cross, you know, languages, borders, and cultures. You're not going to be always aware of who is, you know, who is building a brand image of your company and what that looks like and which digital channels they're coming across your brand on, right? Because there's a lot of, you know, the digital media, social media is the new kind of word of mouth. So you just have to understand that your brand image is crossing borders and languages and cultures. So you kind of need to try to be strategic about how you put yourself out there and the information that you put out there and how you put it out there. So to the extent that your buyers, your target buyers, are connected to the internet, and of course, most of them are, they could come from anywhere in the world, right? Potentially. But conversely, your competitors could also be anywhere in the world. And you know, especially if you're the type of business that operates pretty much entirely online, right? Your products or services are digital. Your competition could be coming from anywhere in the world, whether you like it or not. So, and for that matter, you know, increasingly, as we know, increasingly your employees could also be coming from anywhere in the world. More and more companies are trying to find the best talent possible, wherever that talent may be. They're building global teams, right? So if you want to attract the best talent, you better have a global brand strategy to go with that that brand building exercise for your employer brand. So your potential stakeholders are international, and they're going to see any kind of disconnect or discrepancies between your domestic brand, right? What you're doing at home, your activities at home, the way you serve your customers at home, the way you treat your employees at home, and your international activities as a brand. So, you know, people can see through all that now because everyone's online. So there has to be, basically, there has to be an alignment, right? Your stakeholders and your competitors can be global now. They're connected, they're digitally savvy. So your brand identity needs to be consistent across all the markets that you're trying to serve. And that's why you need a global brand strategy.
So let's dive a little bit deeper. What is localization and how does it contribute to global business success?
So I always like to say localization, the localization industry is probably the best kept secret in successful global business. It's one of those things that often operates behind the scenes, you know, under the radar, but it's absolutely crucial. And to be perfectly honest, I wasn't even aware that there was such a thing as a localization industry until I started my global marketing consultancy and discovered this industry, this wonderful industry that is now sort of my happy place to hang out with because it's full of other language and culture geeks like myself. But it's sort of the secret sauce that makes global business successful. So localization basically can be anything and everything that results in your target buyer feeling like your product or your services or your messaging, including, you know, marketing messaging, was really designed with them in mind, right? And that is what good localization makes your buyer, your stakeholders feel like what you're doing was meant for them. It was meant with them in mind, right? So when you're adapting your product or your service, you can think about things like, you know, what is the preferred language of your buyers where they are? What are their local cultural norms? What are their local values, right? Those values and you know, of course, values influence purchasing decisions. those vary from region to region. What are the local priorities, right? Maybe they're not trying to solve exactly the same kinds of problems that your domestic buyers are trying to solve. What does the local competitor landscape look like? It might be very different from your home market, right? Your local competitors in these new markets might be very different, and you have to kind of adjust your brand strategy or your marketing accordingly. What are the locally preferred payment methods? Super important, right? Especially if you're doing business online. What are the locally preferred channels of communication, including for marketing purposes, but also for customer service? You know, what are the local expectations around good customer service? That might also be a bit different from what you have at home. And you know, language is just one part of that. So all these things require, of course, research, because these are things that you're not going to know intuitively, right? So you have to do your research, you have to do your homework. And you have to work with local experts on the ground to actually make it happen, right? To do the localization work that needs to happen, whether it's product localization or marketing localization, customized service for your existing customers, so that you want to retain those customers that you've acquired and make sure that they're happy, well taken care of. So all those things fall under the umbrella of localization. And honestly, like even countries that, speak the same, quote unquote, the same language, like let's say the US and the UK or even the US and Canada, right? There's going to be differences. There's going to be differences in what people are looking for, what they value, how they talk about their the problems that they're having, the words they use, the things that they want to solve for, and their expectations once they become your customers. So these are all very different things from market to market, and you just have to understand that there are things you don't know, you have blind spots, and then you have to find the right experts to help you mitigate for those blind spots.
Awesome. So let's move the conversation back to you and your experience as an international marketing consultant. What made you decide to focus on the clean tech sector?
Well, I think we all had maybe some time over the course of this pandemic so far to kind of take a little step back and think about, what's really important in life and, what we really want to be doing in terms of our efforts while we're, during our time on this planet. And for me, that really came down to thinking about, who do I want to be helping with the services that I offer as a marketing strategist, as an international marketing strategist? And I came to the conclusion that, what really keeps me up at night, honestly, as a parent and as, a citizen of the world, I just worry a lot about the climate crisis. The climate crisis is on my mind. And to the extent that I can, do my bit, I guess, through the work that I do, as a marketing consultant, I want to make sure that the clients that I'm working with, that I'm helping, expand internationally, that those clients are making the world a better place. So for me, the clean tech sector became my focal point. I'm based in Toronto, and here in Toronto, we happen to have a clean tech innovation hub, which is very exciting. And the more I immerse myself in the sector, the more I'm just kind of blown away by all the really clever and amazing solutions that are already out there and that people are developing and growing and bringing on the market. It's just a fascinating sector to me. And of course, it's not an industry, right? It's not a vertical. It's something that really is a layer on top of basically every other industry. So every industry that we currently are familiar with needs to be made more sustainable, right? If we want to have a sustainable global economy. And so that's where clean tech comes in. And so, clean tech in the widest sense of the term. And it just, it gives me hope. It just gives me hope for the future when I see all the technologies that are being developed and the solutions that are being brought to the marketplace. And it gives me hope that we can actually transition to a greener, more sustainable economy within my lifetime. And I want to do everything I can to facilitate that.
This episode is sponsored by International Expansion Explained. Are you looking to expand internationally, but you're not sure where to start? or you export already but would like to venture further overseas, reach out to arrange an international clarity session and learn more about growth plans at katherinereed.com. That is katherinereed.com.
So, Catherine, you host a podcast as well. So as a podcaster, what are some particularly valuable insights that you've learned from your guests?
Oh, gosh, there's so many. You know, I've published on the day we're speaking, I just recently published episode number 229. So,
wow,
lots of episodes. Yeah, I've been at it since 2016. And, you know, it used to be weekly. Now it's bi-weekly. So, you know, I've scaled back a little bit, but lots of really, really fascinating people I've talked to on the show, and experts of all varieties. You know, what they have in common is that they have some sort of expertise around how to help brands become global and be successful at the global level. I've learned so much. I mean, I'm not a techie, right? So one of the things that I didn't realize when I started the podcast is, you know, having interviewed now several people who are experts in software internationalization, I didn't realize that software internationalization was a thing, right? So, I'm not a developer, but basically internationalization in the context of, you know, localization is what you have to do to your code, the underlying code of your software or your app or what have you, to make it global ready, right? To make it compatible with localization efforts later on. So a lot of tech companies, especially the ones who are kind of starting off here in North America, and they you know, they start off in this English language bubble more or less, and they don't really worry too much at the beginning about, you know, going global because the North American market is so huge, and that's great. But at some point they get to a point where they think, well, wouldn't it be great to launch in markets overseas, right? And of course it makes sense because it's a digital product or service, and, you know, you're not exporting a physical thing. So of course, you know, go global. You should be thinking about going global from day one, honestly. But then they run into this issue where they realize after the fact that their actual software isn't what they call internationalized, right? So then they have to retroactively kind of, you know, retrofit the actual code, which, as you can imagine, is very time consuming and expensive to do. But it has to be done if you then want to localize your software, localize your app, what have you, for other markets around the world. And so there's a lot of education, I think, that still needs to happen with developers and computer science students, frankly, even at the university level, around this topic of internationalization. It's not always on people's radar, and it should be. It should be there from day one. And it's not rocket science. It's just something you have to think about, and it's easily taken care of if you know to take care of it. It's just expensive and time consuming to fix it later on. So that's something I learned. And gosh, so many other things, like just the localization space generally. I was shocked really that I had never heard of localization until I went into global marketing, especially because, you know, in university, I had kind of toyed with the idea of becoming a translator, but it wasn't really my vocation. And translation is definitely part of localization, but like that's just kind of the tip of the iceberg. And people really don't realize all the other things that go into, you know, localization efforts. And just the learning curve on that for me has been exciting and fascinating. And I've sort of become a bit of a, I guess you could say, a cheerleader for the localization industry, because I just think it's so important. And I also want to try and get it away from this, honestly, this tendency to commoditize itself, and bring it into the realm of, you know, value-based pricing as much as possible, because it's an international growth driver, right? It drives international growth. So it's super important, and companies should see it as an investment.
So what are some trends in global marketing that you think will become increasingly important going forward?
Well, I mean, like many sectors, I think the use of AI is really creeping into all kinds of applications that global marketers are leveraging, and it's becoming more and more sophisticated. I mean, alone in the realm of localization, there's more and more applications for AI. You know, with AI-powered machine translation, and you know, even language multilingual generation of content, right? It's really exciting what is becoming possible. Even things like multilingual customer service, you know, it's becoming more and more AI driven, and so that's very exciting to me. Another thing that I see happening with global companies is that English is really more and more, it's seen as one of just many languages that they operate in, right? It's not like the default anymore. It's one of many languages. And honestly, truly global companies now, they serve on average a minimum of about 30 different language groups, right? If you go to the websites of big global brands, it's in the realm of, you know, 30 languages served, right? Just if you look at their websites. The number of languages that global brands are expected to cater to is increasing by the year. So that's one trend I'm seeing. I'm also seeing, not just globally, but even at a local level, but it extends to global brands, of course, an increasing demand by stakeholders for global brands to think about their footprint, right? Their sustainability, their environmental sustainability. And people are becoming very sophisticated around detecting greenwashing, you know, because we've all seen it. We've all seen what greenwashing looks like, and we've all heard of global brands doing it. It's not a good idea to greenwash, because you're going to get caught out, you're going to get exposed for doing it, and it's going to hurt your brand. So, but people increasingly around the world do expect brands to think about how they're going to make their businesses, their operations more sustainable, their supply chains, and the ways of determining that, of really auditing those things, is becoming more and more sophisticated. So I'm seeing that also, that is going to be part of sort of the table stakes. I think table stakes for more and more brands is going to be, are you operating in a sustainable way? And can you prove that you are? That's becoming important.
About one final question I ask everyone who comes on the show. Can you tell us about one memorable moment from your international career? The most successful, the funniest, the most catastrophic, your pick.
Oh, gosh. I'm going to go way, way back. I'm going to date myself. And this is sort of in my, I guess you could say, my previous career, when I was still looking to become sort of an academic, right? I was a linguist. I thought I was going to be a linguistics professor. And on my very, very first ever international conference that I went to, I really went big. I got accepted to present a paper that I'd written at an international conference in New Delhi in India. And I had never, ever been to India before. I'd never been anywhere near that far east before, you know, coming from Canada. Although at the time I was actually based in Berlin, because I was in Berlin for my doctoral degree. But I went to India all by myself. First ever time going to India, I traveled by myself. I didn't know anyone at the conference. I had no network there yet, nothing. And got off the plane. And I just remember feeling like I just landed on a completely different planet. It was just mind-blowing to me. And it was only 10 days that I spent there, but it kind of changed my whole perspective on everything. It was just such an immersive experience. And I knew when I left there, I knew I would want to go back there someday to just see more. It was just so fascinating and so different from anything I'd ever experienced. But on the very last day there, I was sort of behind schedule in a rush to get to the airport on time to get my flight home. and got in the taxi to get to the airport. And on the way to the airport, I'm padding around like my pockets, and I realized there's something in my pocket, and it's the key from my hotel room. And it back in the day, it was this was in the 90s. I'm dating myself, mid 90s. It was still a regular key, like, you know, not a key card. It was a big honking, you know, metal key with a big key holder. And the problem was I had had a roommate in this hotel, because I was still, you know, young and on a budget. And I had been sharing a hotel room at this really expensive hotel where the conference was, I think it was the Taj Palace Hotel in New Delhi, with a fellow graduate student from Australia. And she and I, you know, we had shared this room. We had, you know, each, you know, our separate beds, but in the same room. And we only had this one key between the two of us. And I forgot to leave it behind for her at the front desk. And we only had the one key. And I thought, oh my goodness, now she is locked out of the room. She is probably also getting ready to head back, you know, to Australia. And she's probably, you know, I was supposed to leave the key for her and I forgot. And anyway, I never did find out whether, you know, how that worked out. I felt so terrible, but that was sort of the most stressful thing. And I felt, oh, I still think about it to this day. You know, what happened? Did Judith get back into the room on time? You know, did she miss her flight because of me? I mean, I'm sure the hotel had a backup key, but anyway, that was, you know, that was one of my first international experiences that kind of stuck with me.
You'll have to reconnect with her. And
I've tried to find her. I've tried to find her on LinkedIn, and I don't know, maybe she got married and changed her last name or something. I know I did. So, you know, we just never reconnected afterwards. And of course, this was back in the day when, you know, we all didn't have like social media, and, you know, we didn't have, I don't even know if we exchanged emails. Like, it was just, you know, back before everything was digital. So I don't know how that worked out, but yeah, if she's listening, I'm sorry. I hope it wasn't too stressful.
Definitely memorable. Okay. Catherine, before we go, who should connect with you? And tell us a bit more about your current role.
Well, I am focused now on helping clean tech companies that are at that point where they are well established in their home market. So they probably have an in-house marketing team already, even if it's just a team of one, but they realize that marketing is necessary if you're going to be growing your company. And they're at a point where they are strategically targeting international markets to grow into. That's where I can be valuable. And, you know, I have one foot in the localization industry. I have lots of knowledge in that industry, connections, and I can help with, you know, navigating that part of building the business and figuring out what kinds of vendors you're going to need and how you can work with those vendors. Just marketing strategy, right? I'm a content marketer by trade, I guess. And so I'm all about content marketing strategy for international growth. So if there's clean tech brand leaders out there, or, you know, honestly, brand leaders from companies that are extremely sustainability driven, I'd love to hear from you. Connect with me on LinkedIn. I'd love to have a chat and see if I can be helpful in any way. And in general, you know, I'd encourage anyone who's interested in global growth and global brand building to go check out my podcast, the Worldly Marketer Podcast. If you have any suggestions for guests for the podcast, what I'm looking for at this point, honestly, is guests who are client side, who are working at, if not clean tech companies, then definitely sustainability driven companies that are already global, doing well on a global stage, are successfully, you know, serving an international client base, and would like to talk about their experiences, right? That can come on the show and talk about their learnings, you know, impart some of their wisdom, basically who can be, you know, aspiring case studies for my listeners.
I want to thank you for your insights, Catherine, and thank you for joining us on the International Business Podcast.
Thank you so much, Audrey.
You can find the podcast on all the major platforms. Make sure to subscribe. Do not miss the weekly episodes. And are you an international professional? Connect with us on LinkedIn to come on the show. For now, cheers.